I'm Montse Alvarado tonight on EWTN News Nightly.
Israel launched Operation Rising Lion.
The world reacts after a stunning attack by Israel on Iran sends shockwaves through the Middle East. Final preparations. Hear reactions from lawmakers as Washington, D.C. gets ready to honor the U.S. military with a parade. The road ahead. The Vatican makes a big announcement regarding a few soon-to-be saints. And
to look back at it and see that I ended up sitting right next to the Pope at Game 1 of the World Series is pretty incredible.
As the Chicago White Sox prepare to honor Pope Leo XIV, learn about the fond memories one fan holds of his time with then Father Robert Prevost. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the Feast of St. Anthony of Padua. Our top story tonight, fighting breaks out in the Middle East between Iran and Israel. Video from the West Bank shows missiles in the air on the way to Tel Aviv in Israel, part of Iran's retaliation for large-scale airstrikes carried out by Israel early this morning. Iran says the attack was a declaration of war, and tensions in the region, which were already high, are flaring up even more. This afternoon, Iran fired hundreds of missiles toward Israel. Most of them were intercepted by Israel's air defense system. And we now know the U.S. is also helping Israel shoot down the missiles. But at least one struck its target in Tel Aviv. We're hearing reports of several, possibly dozens, of people taking to the hospital for injuries. This morning, Israel targeted nuclear facilities in different cities across the country, attempting to destroy Iran's nuclear program. It also targeted and killed several top military leaders, including three generals, as well as Fardoun Abbasi, former head of the country's Atomic Energy Organization. The strikes were made unilaterally. The United States was not involved. After the attack, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu addressed Israel shortly after the strikes.
A nation of lions will rise. The lion will rise and the lion will be exalted. We are going to achieve many achievements, thanks to you and thanks to our heroic soldiers, with the help of God.
In Iran, Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khamenei released a statement saying in part, "Don't think that they hit and it's over. No, they started the work and started the war. We will not allow them to escape safely from this great crime they committed." Now we would like to bring on EWTN News contributor Alberto Fernandez. Alberto, thank you so much for joining us. Israel says it launched the attacks to keep Iran from developing a nuclear weapon. How close was Iran to creating one?
Well, we don't know exactly, but we know that this is something that that Iran has been working on for years. And supposedly Israel had, you know, reasonable intelligence that the breakout time had become much sooner, maybe within a year, maybe a matter of months. And it does seem that there's considerable evidence from the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, that Iran had violated protocols and was speeding up moving towards that eventuality.
The IAEA definitely was the reasoning that we're hearing everywhere was the motivator for the intervention from Israel. But we know that the U.S. and Secretary Rubio said that the U.S. was not involved in the attack, but we are already helping shoot down these missiles. How likely is it that the U.S. will be further engaged in this conflict?
Well, that's a very interesting question. I think it's mostly up to Iran. Iran had as its strategy something they announced dozens of times, that if such a conflict happened, such as we're seeing, that they would target American bases in the region and target American targets elsewhere. So it kind of seems that the ball is in the Iranian court as far as targeting the Americans, which would then, you know, lead to an American escalation. So far, that doesn't happen, which conflicts with Iranian rhetoric from the past, that they would immediately target the Americans. They haven't done that yet.
What have you heard about the negotiations that were supposed to take place on Sunday?
Well, I've heard that they are obviously that they're canceled. But certainly the administration, the Trump administration, has made it clear that they are interested in a negotiating process, and they have signaled that to the Iranians. So the question now is, we've had kind of almost 24 hours of this war. We've had the initial Israeli strikes, and we had the Iranians failed with some drone attacks, but the Iranians then responded with, over 100 missiles, as you said. Some people have been injured, some in critical condition in Israel, including, by the way, 5 Palestinian children. So it's not just not Israelis that have been hurt by this Iranian barrage. The question is, what happens now? Now Israel responds, and then Iran responds, and what? At what point do we talk about kind of an end game or a way out for one or both sides?
Well, now Iran has called this attack an act of war. Is this really a war? Does Israel have the capacity to fight on two fronts? It's currently engaged in the war with Hamas, an Iranian proxy.
Well, the war with Hamas is at a very kind of very low level. It may not seem that way to the Palestinians of Gaza, but it certainly is. It's nothing compared to the conflict that is happening with Iran. The Israelis plan for at least a couple weeks of war. It seems that Iran has a lot more to lose than Israel in the war continuing. Israel has refrained from doing two things so far. Number one, Israel hasn't attacked political targets in Iran, the political leadership. And number two, Israel has refrained from attacking economic targets, meaning Iran's oil industry. It would be very easy for Israel to bring Iran to its knees by targeting that. So we're at a kind of inflection point to see what both sides do next.
Well, we'll be watching that very carefully and waiting for your analysis. Thank you, Alberto.
Thank you.
The White House confirms President Donald Trump and Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu spoke by phone after the attack. Trump also met with his National Security Council to discuss the situation. On Truth Social, the president said Iran may still have a second chance, but he also warns Iran must make a deal before there's nothing left. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen, what are you hearing from the president?
Well, Monse, very big story tonight, obviously, and here's what we're hearing. President Trump says he gave Iran chance after chance to make a deal, and tonight he is imploring Iran once again to come to the table and get a deal done so, as he says, there's no more death and destruction.
President Donald Trump posts on Truth Social this morning, 2 months ago I gave Iran a 60-day ultimatum to make a deal. They should have done it. Today is day 61. I told them what to do, but they just couldn't get there. And Secretary of State Marco Rubio writing, "We are not involved in strikes against Iran, and our top priority is protecting American forces in the region. Israel advised us that they believe this action was necessary for its self-defense. Let me be clear, Iran should not target U.S. interests or personnel." Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said the attack had been months in the making, and that Israel had no choice but to act now.
"Our action will help make the world a much safer place. I want to thank President Trump for his leadership in confronting Iran's nuclear weapons program. He has made clear time and again that Iran cannot have a nuclear enrichment program."
In Tehran today, large crowds of Iranians marched to protest the attacks, chanting "revenge, only revenge" against both Israel and the United States. The Arms Control Association critical of the strike, writing, "Netanyahu's decision to attack Iran was clearly designed to sabotage the U.S.-Iranian negotiations, which had seemed to be advancing toward an agreement to curb Iran's nuclear weapons potential." In Sweden, the NATO Secretary General also addressed the attack.
"This was a unilateral action by Israel, so I think it is crucial for many allies, including the United States, to work as we speak to de-escalate. I know they're doing that, and I think that is now the first order of the day."
And at the United Nations,
the Secretary General asks both sides to show maximum restraint, avoiding at all costs a descent into deeper conflict.
Now, U.S. Special Envoy Steve Witkoff still plans to travel to Oman this weekend for talks on Tehran's nuclear program, but not clear tonight whether Iran will participate in those talks.
at the White House. Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Well, lawmakers were quick to respond to the Israeli strike on Iran, most supporting Israel, defending its people and nation, and saying the United States must unequivocally stand with the Israeli people as they fight for their right to exist.
Iran has proven time again, not only are they a threat to democracy and freedom, not only that between Iran, the IRGC, their military, and their proxies attacked the United States, killed Americans, attacked our bases, attacked our ships. But it's time to show Iran that this is not acceptable behavior, and moving forward with a nuclear program is unacceptable.
Senate Majority Leader John Thune said in a statement, in part, Iran must never gain access to a nuclear weapon. The United States Senate stands ready to work with President Trump and with our allies in Israel to restore peace in the region and, first and foremost, to defend the American people from Iranian aggression, especially our troops and civilians serving overseas. The attack on Iran is already showing effects in the market, with oil prices surging. Prices soared as much as 13% per barrel in the U.S. on Thursday. The price has fallen for now, but is still up 5%. The spike is based on fears of a wider conflict breaking out in the Middle East. Economists say if Iran pulls out of the global market, oil prices could jump even further. The U.S. Army takes to the streets of Washington, D.C. tomorrow for peaceful purposes. The nation's oldest service branch is celebrating its 250th anniversary, which just happens to be President Trump's 79th birthday. Some lawmakers say the festival and parade reek of politics. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us with more.
Good evening. It was around this time 8 years ago that then-President Donald Trump attended Bastille Day celebrations in France, which he apparently loved and was the inspiration for Saturday's military parade. While some lawmakers on Capitol Hill support it, others say it's a waste of taxpayer money. Current estimates from the U.S. Army put the price tag as high as $45 million.
I would save the money, but it's, you know, if the president wants to have a parade, he's the president and I'm not.
Others agree and tell me a military parade in the nation's capital projects the wrong image.
We haven't seen a parade of tanks and thousands of troops and flyovers by a military aircraft in our American capital in decades. And that's on purpose, because that's more typical of capitals like Moscow and Beijing and Pyongyang than it is Washington, D.C.
Never been a big fan of goose-stepping soldiers in big tanks and missiles rolling down the street. So if you ask me, I wouldn't have done it.
But Senator Lindsey Graham says Army soldiers and history should be celebrated.
The men and women in the parade are not goose-stepping soldiers. They're proud Americans, and it's the 250th anniversary of the Army. We should all celebrate it. And one way you celebrate, you have a parade.
Former Navy pilot Senator Mark Kelly has a message for President Trump.
Donald Trump, he's thrown himself a military parade, but he doesn't know what it means to serve or put country before himself.
Army officials are expecting hundreds of thousands of people to attend, among them protesters speaking out against President Trump. Crews are laying out nearly 19 miles of barricades around the parade festival area and even the U.S. Capitol. Thousands of police and Secret Service will be on site.
Donald Trump, before the eyes of the world, issued a direct threat against any protest here in D.C. against his fascist military parade. Well, guess what? This just means there must be, and in fact there will be, protest here in the streets of D.C.
This will be the largest parade in Washington, D.C. since 1991, when the National Victory Parade was held to celebrate the success of the Gulf War. That parade cost around $12 million. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
Joining us now to break this down some more is retired Marine Colonel William Dunn, who is the author of Gunfighters Rule and CEO of the Strategic Resilience Group. Colonel Dunn, thank you for speaking with us today. I want to start with tomorrow's military parade in D.C. Against the backdrop of this very tense situation in the Middle East, what kind of safety precautions do you think are being taken?
Well, first of all, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate being here. I think it's a great thing that they're doing the parade. You know, I agree it's expensive. Maybe there's assets to be spent other places. But this event that is happening tomorrow had nothing to do with the Israeli-Iranian events. They just happen to happen at the same time, and they coincide with the president's birthday, which I think has no bearing on this whatsoever. The safety precautions should be simple. Make sure there's no protesters that can get with our soldiers, our brothers and sisters out there who are supporting this nation on a daily basis and are willing to put their lives at risk for this country.
Well, now let's talk about those attacks, Israel's attack on Iran. This operation was obviously very carefully planned and had many moving parts. What stood out to you the most, and how was Israel able to pull this off, make it happen?
Well, the biggest thing that stands out to me is I believe there are folks that are underestimating the Israeli intel capability. They did this attack because they had no other choice. Their intel told them that Iran was much closer to a nuclear weapon than I think many of us believed. I believe in their intel. We saw what they did with Hamas and Hezbollah with that exquisite intel. So I believe that their intel told them they had no other choice. And I argue that Iran started this war, not Israel. Israel just had no choice but to act.
Well, we
precision. Go ahead. Precision strikes, it's outstanding. Go ahead.
They do. I mean, the precision is incredible. The lack of civilian casualties is something else that hasn't been commented on. But obviously, we do know that the strikes that came back to Israel have had civilian casualties, some Palestinian. We have learned that the U.S. ground-based air defense systems are helping to shoot down Iranian missiles. While the U.S. doesn't want to be part of a military conflict, do you think that it will be the extent of the U.S. involvement, just that, or will there be more?
And I heard your other guest. It's going to depend on Iran. You know, our company has people in the Middle East right now. They've been under attack before by Iranian-backed entities. Iran should not mess with U.S. forces, U.S. troops, or America anywhere, any place. We do not want to be brought into this, but I am very confident our president will protect our men and women in uniform. And if they attack us, we will respond. I hope it doesn't come to that. I really, really hope that Iran will come to the table immediately and realize that the Iranian Iranian nuclear aspirations are not the way of the future for them or their country or their people. If they do that, I believe this event will end pretty quickly. If not, it'll go on for weeks, and hopefully it will end with the inability of Iran to ever have a nuclear weapon.
Well, we're grateful for your service, retired Marine Colonel William Dunn. Thank you for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me very much. Have a great weekend.
President Trump will retain control of the California National Guard for now after an appeals court blocked a federal judge's order directing the president to return control of the troops to California. Trump celebrated the appeals court ruling, saying in part, quote, "We saved L.A." This comes only hours after a federal judge's order was set to take effect at noon today. U.S. District Court Judge Charles Breyer ruled on Thursday that deployment of the National Guard in California was illegal and violated the 10th Amendment and exceeded Trump's statutory authority. The order did not apply to Marines deployed to the protests. Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi visited the site of the deadly Air India crash today. The tragedy left hundreds dead and killed dozens on the ground in the vicinity of the crash. The prime minister also took time to meet with the lone passenger who survived. The Indian government has launched an investigation into the cause, and the plane's black box has been found. We have a lot more still to come on EWTN News Nightly, including From Satanist to Saint, we'll explain. Plus, we now know when Carlo Acutis and Pier Giorgio Frassati will be canonized, and it could throw a wrench in some people's plans. And 20 years ago, he sat with the future Pope Leo XIV at the World Series as a kid. Today, he speaks to EWTN, how Eddie Schmidt remembers his night with the Holy Father. A major announcement today from the Vatican about several soon-to-be saints.
We declare that Pier Giorgio Frassati and his companion Carlo Acutis will be canonized September 7th, 2025.
Pope Leo XIV made the announcement during the first public consistory of his pontificate. The canonization of Frassati originally was set for early August. The canonization of Acutis was postponed following the death in April of Pope Francis. The mother of the soon-to-be saint says he once said his goal in life was to remain united to Christ.
why I say that he was my savior, because through Carlo I understood that really Jesus is present in the Blessed Sacrament and in the sacrament, that the sacrament are the means through which the Holy Trinity give us grace.
Courtney Mares, Rome correspondent for the Catholic News Agency and EWTN's resident expert on Blessed Carlo, says the mountain climber Frassati and computer genius Acutis share several things in common.
They were both incredibly devoted to the Eucharist, as well as to serving the poorest among them. And I think that one of the messages that's being sent by the decision to canonize them together is an affirmation of the Church's universal call to holiness, that each person is called by God to use their unique talents and gifts for God's glory, whether it's climbing a mountain or coding a website.
During the consistory, Pope Leo also announced the canonization of seven other blesseds to take place on October 19th. They include Bartolo Longo, an Italian lawyer in the late 19th century and former Satanist. He converted after developing a love for the rosary.
He actually helped to found what is now known as the Basilica of Our Lady of Pompeii, which, if you remember, Pope Leo XIV was elected on the feast day of Our Lady of Pompeii. So you know that this canonization will also be close to the Pope's heart, as well as a moment that has potential to inspire many people around the world with the message that it's never too late to turn your life around.
And just a reminder, EWTN has an original documentary on the life of Blessed Carlo Acutis. I Am With You is an unprecedented look at his life and the work he did on his website, documenting Eucharistic miracles. The movie is available at EWTN On Demand. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, the Pope's favorite socks. A firsthand account from a baseball game in Chicago 20 years ago and why it's relevant again. Finally tonight, Pope Leo XIV is sending a special video message for Saturday's Mass in his honor at the home of the Chicago White Sox. The Holy Father is missing Saturday's celebration, but he has been to Wrigley Field many times in person. This includes Game 1 of the 2005 World Series. Then Father Robert Prevost was in attendance when the White Sox defeated the Houston Astros 5-3, en route to winning the title. With him that night were his friends Ed Schmidt and Ed's five-year-old grandson. EWTN's Tara Mergener recently spoke with the grandson.
And the grandson, Eddie Schmidt, is now 25 years old, and he joins us now. Eddie, great to be with you. I think this is one of the, you know, you never know moments. Not many people can say they've been to a World Series with a future pope. So you were only five. Do you remember anything about that?
I remember bits and pieces, and it's good to be here with you, Tara. I remember bits and pieces of the game, and my grandfather was always good friends with Father Bob. And, you know, to look back at it and see that I ended up sitting right next to the Pope at Game 1 of the World Series is pretty incredible. And I always knew that that video existed of the last out of me right next to him. But, you know, I looked back at it after all this started to emerge, and I seen, you know, I was like, is he the one sitting next to me? And sure enough, he was. And it was just incredible to see that. My phone was getting blown up in the beginning because he's a very good family friend of ours, I'd say. And when I was actually in Las Vegas when the news came out that he became the Pope, and then everyone was flooding my phone, and it was just an incredible moment for our family and for him as well. He's an unbelievable guy. I know a lot of this is about, you know, me being at the game with him and stuff, but I would just like to say, if this message could reach the Pope, on behalf of the Schmidt family and the Schokel family, we wish you the best, and we know you're going to do great. And we can't wait for you to come back to Chicago.
I'm sure you guys are all super proud. So how did your grandfather strike up a friendship with the future Pope? And how many White Sox games did they attend together before all this?
So my grandfather was, he was on the board at St. Rita High School. And that's how he became friends with the Pope. Well, Father Bob at the time. And they've known each other for a few decades. And, I mean, they just, they were always pretty close. I think, you know, Father Bob, if you kind of know anything really about him personally, he's just a very straightforward guy. He's very caring, very, you know, down to earth. And he's just a great person overall. And my grandfather was very similar. And to the point of how many games they went to, I couldn't tell you exactly how many, but you know, if he was in Chicago, I'm sure my grandfather tried his best to meet up with him or go take him to dinner or whatnot, whatever he was able to do, because I know he's a very busy, busy guy.
What a special friendship it sounds like they had. So flashback for game one of the World Series, you were in Section 140, row 19, and the White Sox recently made that area a landmark, if you can believe it, right? After being there yourself. So as a lifelong fan of the team, what is that like for you?
Well, our family's been diehard White Sox fans since before I was born. We've had the same seats, same section for the World Series that we have them now. So we were there at the ballpark when they put up that mural, I guess you could say. And that's me sitting right next to them at the World Series. It's pretty incredible to see that. Because I still go to games as often as I possibly can. And to see that up there with that picture of me, my dad, and the Pope, it's incredible. Because I'll always, you know, be like, if that was me.
Yeah.
And the last game I went to, actually, I was with my girlfriend and a couple of my buddies and their girlfriends, and my girlfriend was sitting in seat two, the seat that the Pope sat in, because I always sit in my papa's seat, seat one. And there was a little kid in front. He goes, "Do you know you're sitting in the Pope's seat?" And she just started to laugh. So I'm sure a lot of people are kind of, they know the section, they know the seat number and everything, and you know, it's pretty cool to see.
It sure
to see
is.
That.
Well, Eddie Schmidt, who attended Game 1 of the 2005 World Series with the future Pope Leo XIV, what a great story. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much, Tara. Take care.
We thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Montse Alvarado. Good night, and God bless you.